Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the Broadway scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to members of the creative and producing team behind Animal Wisdom, the new musical performance piece that's been described as an avant-cabaret seance, in which the composer-performer Heather Christian confronts the ghosts that haunt her. The show was first performed at the Bushwick Star in Brooklyn in 2017, and when the pandemic altered plans for a 2020 tour, a filmed version was shot this spring at the Woolly Mammoth Theater in Washington, D.C., and will be available to stream nationwide starting May 15th. Later in this episode, I'll be talking with the leaders of the Bushwick Star, Woolly Mammoth, and ACT in San Francisco, about their involvement in the project. But first, here's the composer and performer Heather Christian on reimagining her live performance as a film.
Hey, Heather. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, to start off, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about Animal Wisdom as it existed and as you performed it back in 2017 at the Bushwick Star.
Sure. So Animal Wisdom in 2017 is a hybrid concert theater seance performance that is sort of a requiem within a requiem. I worked for the Catholic Church for 25 years and sort of grew up around ancient religious form. And I was interested in writing a play that followed the EKG of a Requiem Mass rather than a traditional dramatic structure. And then I stuck a textually adapted Requiem in the middle of it, in addition to that. Practically what that meant is that I needed to exercise something out of myself. That was sort of the reason why. I have felt haunted my entire life. And right before we opened... Or not right before, like 5 years before we opened Animal Wisdom, I had come down with a crippling case of what I had defined as career-ending performance anxiety. And so I tasked myself with writing a show to exorcise that demon. So that's what Animal Wisdom is. It's a show about letting go of the actual ghosts that you keep, of the traumatic events that you carry with you. And hopefully it attempts to arrive at some sort of communion with a bunch of strangers who, you know, inevitably have been going through a very similar thing.
Yeah.
And that was that was the show.
Yeah. And that was you and a group of actors who you performed with, right? It was,
yes.
It was you.
Actor musicians. Yes.
Right. Actor musicians. Right. Right. And so what do you remember about the experience of that run in 2017? Did it, number one, did it work as an exorcism for you? And
Yeah, it did. It did. I will show my hand a little bit here in terms of exactly what a crazy lady I am and say that the night before we closed, I got hit like with a lightning strike of like, oh no, Mozart's Requiem killed him. What if, yeah, girl, you're Mozart. So I was afraid. I mean, it did, there's a pretty violent ritual that I stage in the middle of the show, which is we plunge the theater into a complete blackout. And when I say complete, I mean no footlights, no exit signs. We taped over every single like light lead in the space. We listen to this Requiem for 27 minutes, which is the exact duration of how long your brain can sustain the chemical release of a panic attack. That was the ritual, I think. That was the ritual that I performed for 4 months, almost every night. That sort of got me stronger. Once we finished running the show and I survived it, because that's the hardest shit I've ever done. that sort of serves as the exorcism, like proving something to yourself that you didn't think that you were capable of. That's the real exorcism, proving to yourself that you have a community that you didn't think you had. That's the exorcism. Mm. So yes. And I don't remember the first part of your question.
It actually leads me into my next question, which was what... At the time, did you imagine a future life for the show? Did you imagine doing the show again after 4 months? Or what was the future life for that show looking like in your head at that time?
At that time, I was so exhausted that I did not think that the show had a second life in it. No. Also because I wrote it to exist for a very specific version of myself and a very specific moment in time where I was struggling with something. And the physical task of doing the show is so immense that I just couldn't envision a situation where where any sort of theatrical production institution would take on board the labor of both hiring a massive choir and agreeing to only let me do 4 to 5 shows a week. Because I don't think anyone can perform this show more than 4 or 5 times a week, if it's me or if it's another performer. So I didn't think that it was going to be feasible for this to have any other kind of life other than, you know, a record, which we made.
All right. And so when did the film version, how did that evolve? And tell us a little bit about sort of what it looks like. Like, is it a film performance? Is it a film adaptation? Like, tell us a bit about it.
It's a film adaptation.
Okay.
It's a film adaptation. It came about because basically I bullied. I bullied two institutions into the idea. Basically, COVID, right? COVID is the origin story of so much of the art that we have right now. I was supposed to, in 2020, the summer of 2020, start a national tour of Animal Wisdom that was going to have a big sit down in Washington, D.C. at Woolly Mammoth. And then we were going to go to ACT in San Francisco and have a big sit down run there. Right.
And so by that point, you had come around to the idea of doing the show again.
I had, but also because I had had lots of conversations with Maria Goyanis at Woolly Mammoth, who was absolutely not opposed to me hiring an understudy and hiring an alternate performer and finding someone who could give the show their own personal life and flavor and not pretend to be me. So we were in the process of making that happen. So we started pushing these calendar dates back, as we all did. We were like, oh, it's going to be fine in 3 weeks. Oh, it's going to be fine in 3 months. And then it's like, well, Woolly was still open to the idea last year. I guess it was summer of last year. Woolly was still open to the idea of doing a limited engagement run. ACT was not. So the idea was that we were going to mount Animal Wisdom for a more limited engagement with strictly capped seating at Woolly, and ACT was going to send a camera crew and they were going to tape it. I heard this and I immediately reacted to it in a negative way, because the show is so much about the space that it's in. And it's so much about the individuals that it shares that space with. It's really important that it be an intimate experience. The show is so much about the container. It's the story of my formative trauma. I mean, it's put in a fancy dress, but like ultimately this is a very personal document. And so of course I had this massive emotional reaction and I was like, we can't do this unless I have the means to control how it is received. And a living room is a much different theatrical vessel than a theater. And I am on board for adapting it in such a way where the piece becomes less a filmed version of a theatrical piece and more a ritual that is performed in your living room to reconsecrate your external space and your internal space. So that was sort of the directive that I gave myself of, you know, how does the show fulfill that function with a distant community?
Yeah. And how does it, did you find? What are some of the discoveries you made along the way in terms of what it looks like and how it exists in that new form?
I mean, I'm discovering 1,000 things because I've never seen the damn thing before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I feel like every bit of it is a revelation. I will say that some of the rules that I thought I was breaking that were really taboo don't actually come across as that taboo when you break them. If you just change the directive, like speaking into a camera, like using, like looking into a camera and talking to it like it's a person, like it's not that unnerving if you just establish that that's what we're gonna do, and that's the thing, and you get used to it pretty quick, and so it can become a personal experience.
How do you think the show will land differently with audiences in this distance setting versus the audiences who are all around you at the Bushwick Star? Do you have a sense of what the piece carries for them?
I only have a hope of what it carries. I know that when we were doing the theatrical performance, it felt like a massive ask to bring a bunch of people into a room who bought a ticket to a theater show and then ask them to walk down this road of like internal reflection and excavation with me and really think about what they're grieving and what they're carrying. That felt like a massive ask. After this year, I really do feel like everybody has already had this space, this reflective space foisted upon them, and that we're all kind of looking at ourselves and how we've prioritized our lives and how we move through the world and what we're carrying and try to figure out a way to carry it more gracefully or let some of it the fuck go. And I feel like this piece, what I hope this piece is like a rung on that ladder, or at least like an acknowledgement that that's where we are all at currently. And letting it go in some cases can take a page out of the book of the Catholics, like can be as simple as ritualizing it, of just saying, I'm going to let it go. That's what I'm doing right now. And then I'm going to do a bunch of stuff to signify that I'm letting this go. And you just kind of do.
Right. Yeah. Has this experience and the experience of, you know, you did a piece for theater in quarantine as well. Have you thought a little bit about, or has it made you think any differently about the ways in which liveness is a component, an integral component of the work that you make? And do you think differently about work that is made not necessarily to be performed live? Like what's the interplay for you in terms of liveness and then sort of captured liveness? How does that figure into your own thinking as a composer?
I mean, I feel like I'm interested in writing for all different kinds of scenarios. What's been real tasty about this period in time is that we're thinking about it, we're blurring the lines between a lot of these things right now in a really interesting way of what is live. I, for my money, I'm not particularly interested in watching a filmed live thing. But I am interested in like pieces that like push the boundary and are asking exactly what you're asking that question of what makes it live. Like, that's why theater in quarantine is so exciting, is because they're like, what does live mean? Let's let's figure out a million different ways to figure out what live means.
Do you think you'll continue to do that and sort of, you know, poke at that even after we're all,
I think so. I mean, I feel like this has forced me to think about how to marry my love of recording, my love of like being in a recording studio with my love of making like 360 degree art, which is not, these two pools never kind of met. They never really met before. And this has really forced, I think, all of us to like think creatively about how those things can speak to each other now. So I have more ideas now than I did, you know, a year and a half ago, because I've had to have them in order to keep going.
Yeah. And speaking of looking ahead, when the pandemic shut theaters in New York down, you were, is it two performances into your new show?
Two previews, rather.
Yeah, exactly. Tell us a little bit about that show and what the plan is. I know it's still around and we'll be back at some point in some form. Tell us a little bit about where, when and where we can hope to see that.
So Oratorio for Living Things is a... I attempted to write a classical, I'm using air quotes if you can't see me, a classical oratorio, in that it is an oratorio in its form and it has no narrative, about the religious epiphany I had when reading a book by Carlo Rovelli, who is an Italian physicist, called The Order of Time. It got me thinking about how time is... really the most holy of trace fossils that we will leave behind as a human species. And so the first act is written in, and time is something that only scales with us because we are the only ones who clock it. So the first act is written in what I imagine to be quantum time, which is time at a molecular scale, and how that, how I think that feels, that mostly deals with the origin of species and the forming of elements. Then there's human time, and that's a memory act. I collected voicemails from strangers for a couple of years and then set the text into these big classical fugues. And then the final act is cosmic time. And the only way that we can measure time in space is by when there are collisions that happen. So cosmic time is a lot about violence. So I'm trying to like investigate all these different aspects of time, why it's holy, why it's emotional, and take why theoretical physics is an emotional thing in the first place. And it's 12 vocalists in a non-proscenium space. It's an immersive space. We made an oratorio. an oratory to mount the thing in specifically for it. And it is a sung through piece, and we have a small teapot or teacup orchestra of six musicians and 12 incredibly virtuosic vocalists. And we're probably going to have to wait until next year to bring it back, because it is literally the deadliest show in showbiz in COVID era, because people are singing 2 feet away from your face. Right. And proximity is part of what is one of the tools that we are using to illustrate a bunch of the concepts that are in the music. So yeah. I don't know that I want to compromise.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, actually. So that's not something you wouldn't consider doing something like, or at least not yet doing something like you've done with Animal Wisdom for Oratorio.
Not until it's had its moment. I don't think, I think it really needs to have its moment. So I can run this experiment to see if it works. And I feel like after that point, then we can talk about, you know, whether the thing wants to go to a more traditional concert venue. If the thing wants to, I don't know if this particular thing will have a life as a film or as a recording. Although, I mean, I listen to Carmen and Burana on repeat and have a very fleshed out theatrical experience every time I do so, but I don't. I think that's probably for later for this piece.
Yeah. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing the live oratorio when we can. And even before that, we will get to see the Animal Wisdom film. We're looking forward to it. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me, Heather.
Thanks for chatting with me about it.
Yeah. Okay.
That was Heather Christian, the creator and star of Animal Wisdom. I'll have more on the show right after the break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, let's take a look at the film version of Animal Wisdom from another angle, as I speak with the leaders of three organizations involved in the production of the film. Nola Lane of the Bushwick Star, Maria Goyanis of Woolly Mammoth, and Pam McKinnon of ACT.
Hi, Noel, Maria, and Pam. Thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So, Noel, I wonder if we could just start with you to talk a little bit about your experience with Animal Wisdom at the Bushwick Star. And I just wonder if even then you were imagining being involved in that piece, having a future life in some way.
Yeah. Well, making it was such a bit of an adventure. I mean, Heather, working with Heather is a pretty amazing experience. She's an artist who has very strong feelings about what she's making, and such a like depth of resources to pull from when she's making a piece in terms of the music and her like sense of how she's trying to communicate and what kind of environment she's trying to create. And yet at the same time, it was in a state where Heather was very like upfront from the beginning about like she needs help, like some outside eyes to shape this thing and figure out like what it is and how it really functions for an audience. So that was a really fun collaboration, but that all goes to say, I guess we weren't quite sure what we were going to end up with and how it was going to be received. And so there wasn't this thought that like, oh, and then it should travel. It was like, let's make it, let's figure out what this thing is. Let's invest in, this moment right now. And the wonderful surprise was to see, not so much a surprise, but definitely, a relief to see how strongly people did react to it. It really had a really great reception when we did it at the Star. So I think that's when the conversation started to happen. Maria, pulled my coat at another show we were at together at Jack and said, hey, what's happening with that? and at that time we didn't know, but that's exactly how the conversation started.
Yeah. And then, so I guess for Maria and Pam, I wonder if you could first just tell us a little bit about what about Animal Wisdom made the show a good fit for your organization and your audiences. I guess, Maria, let's start with you in terms of what you responded to and why you were so interested in having it come initially in the plan was to do it in a live performance.
Yeah, I I've known Heather for a long time. I've seen her perform for a long time in Taylor Mack shows and in the team shows, et cetera. But really, Animal Wisdom felt like the first time that I was actually seeing the fullness of who it is that she is, aside from her like band concerts and things like that. And I went to see Animal Wisdom in the months after composer, lyricist Michael Friedman had passed. Mm-hmm. And I was having just a lot of grief. And what I realized was that I actually didn't know how to process it. I didn't know where to go to process it. I talked about it, you know, and I had not yet sort of had an experience in the theater that actually felt like I was honoring and recognizing his passing for myself. And Animal Wisdom did that for me. And afterwards, I was a mess, Gordon. I literally was like weeping mess. And I went up to Heather and I said, I got to talk to you about this, but I can't talk about it now. And it has just basically, it had stayed with me. And I have been, I just think that that piece, it in general, right? We don't have, as a society, a lot of outlets to communally talk in this way about the passing of loved ones. Usually is in church, it's a spiritual practice. And what was so moving to me was Animal Wisdom is Heather's, it almost is like her creating and consecrating a space to have a kind of spiritual practice, a requiem with people in that space. And I found that really moving. So actually it was, in my application to be the artistic director of Woolly Mammoth, I wrote it down. I said, you know, they ask you for a season. I was like, Animal Wisdom. and knowing that Woolly Mammoth was not a theater company that does musicals. I mean, I think the last musical we did wasn't even a musical. It was Mr. Burns by Anne Washburn with Michael Friedman's song.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But it's not really a musical, it's a play with music, right? So I knew that I was already sort of pushing the envelope in terms of Woolly Mammoth and thinking about bringing music into that space. But there are musicals like Animal Wisdom that are, you know, not, it just like decidedly not commercial, you know, that are really meant to do something else. And it felt like Woolly Mammoth could be a space for musicals like that. And it felt like Animal Wisdom would be the perfect first show to do that. Also, the fact that the Bushwick Star had done such an impeccable job of putting it up that, you know, instead of starting something from scratch to bring something that actually had existed and that I saw, that I knew was going to be moving, felt really good. And Andy Donald and I, who works with Pam, and that was really sort of where I was talking to Noel of like, okay, let's try to get a tour together. Let's try to actually get something together so that we can make it make sense for it to come to DC and maybe it can go elsewhere. And I know that ACT had been interested in it before I even called Andy, but it was sort of a great marriage. And we can talk about the pivoting to the film. That's its own conversation, I think.
That's going to be my whole next question. Yeah, so. But first, Pam, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about how you imagined Animal Wisdom fitting into, you know, your own work at ACT and the work that the organization does.
Absolutely. I love, Maria, what you said about, well, a lot of things, but I'm going to pick up on one thread, just about space and just about, I'm working on a show right now called Communion, and it's an interactive Zoom play, so it's not in space. But that's, I, you know, my job application at ACT also, you know, pitch a season. It didn't include Animal Wisdom because I didn't have the good fortune to have seen it at Bushwick Star. But I talked about space a lot and what can we do as gathering places. And the Strand Theater, our smaller theater, continues to be a new space for us. When I started, you know, half my tenure at ACT has been in COVID, so spaceless. We've been a time theater, not a space theater. You know, I, as a director, I think about architecture, I think about rooms, I talk about roominess for plays and for storytelling. I want, you know, to break that fourth wall and not solely with just direct address, but in creative ways. And I felt when Andy Donald, my associate artistic director, had mentioned this piece to me, I knew Heather Christian's work a tiny bit. I saw the archival taping of the Bushwick Star production. And truly, by the first chorus of the first song, I went back to Andy and said, yeah, we're in. We're done. This is it. And then also, you know, knowing it was Maria, you know, helming a theater that I had worked a few times, you know, Woolly Mammoth, it just felt like synergy upon synergy of like, well, this just has to happen. And, you know, so it was supposed to be, it was supposed to be live. It was a co-production. It all made sense in a very, you know, exciting but traditional co-production way.
Right.
You know, ACT also doesn't have a history of musicals, though they've done some. And I loved that this is a play with music and is so person-centered, not, you know, is that a real pit orchestra? It's not that. and just wanted that humanness on Market Street.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the pivot then, because, you know, it was going to be a tour that would have happened in the summer of 2020. And that couldn't happen. And one of the things that Heather mentioned when we spoke earlier in this episode was about an early idea that involved doing a performance or a limited run that was then filmed for ACT that she had a sort of strong reaction to and didn't think that that was right. How did you all come to figure out a way to make this movie, and how massively different is it from the more traditional model, as
Gordon,
you were just discussing, of like putting a tour together with
it
a co-production?
Is massively Tell me, Maria. Different.
There were so many.
It is massively different. And we're not even talking about putting the pandemic on top of that. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that's the. You know, when we talked about the possibility of actually filming it, I basically was calling around to different filmmakers to see what could we make this for? Because we can't suddenly just find $1 million to do an independent movie. And that's like a small independent movie budget, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember when we talked about it with Heather, what she said really clearly was, I already have a really great archival taping of the show from the Bushwick Star. I don't need to do another one of those. If we're going to do this, let's actually challenge ourselves and make it so that it works for the medium. And that got really exciting. But that also was like terrifying because I don't know how to make a movie. And I certainly don't know how to make one during COVID. And so at every step along the way, I sort of was like, you can press the release valve here, Heather. You know, if you're like, this doesn't feel right, you know, let's talk through it. Because it really is, as Noel was saying, like, her work is so personal, right? If she's not going to get fully on board and able to actually bring the vulnerability that she needs to actually, you know, be in it, sing those songs, actually share this story, it's not going to work. You know, it won't work as a piece. So we started to pivot. The thing really started to coalesce, I think, when we found a director. For me, I don't know if that's the same case for you, Noel and Pam, but like we talked through different directors. Heather met with some, and we found Amber McGinnis, who is Southern woman, theater maker and a filmmaker, had just done a feature film and was doing the circuit, and just she fell in love with the piece. And really also the thing that felt like incredibly important in terms of that collaboration was that she knew that she was interpreting a piece, Heather's piece, for film, and that Heather was still the key artist, primary artist and collaborator. That is also incredibly different in film, right? Usually you have a director who's the auteur, who also writes it, who is actually coming with like that vision. And this was really about collaborating with Heather to translate a vision that already existed into the film medium. And that I feel really so grateful that Amber and her team from Outskirt Media wanted to work on it.
Yeah.
There was also, I will say there was an interim moment because we didn't know that the pandemic was going to be you know, in our lives for months and months and months. There was an interim moment when Maria, you had a set designer design like boxed in screened rooms, right?
That I so blocked that, that, so that out of my mind, my friend. Pods,
right? Well, and then we were going to hop it to the Geary, so to my 1,000-seat theater, somehow have a socially distant, we were, you know, ACT also has a conservatory. Our students, our third-year students generally get a moment on the Geary stage. We were going to have them in the balcony be the choir. I mean, it went through many live iterations and possibilities that actually started to go down design roads before we realized, ah, film, let's find some directors, and then, you know, Heather's, you know, great meeting with Amber. I mean, you know, just wanted to bring in that chapter.
Holy moly, I really put that out of my mind. Also because that all happened in the fall when we were all like working on what the hell it means to produce during a pandemic. It felt like such a whirlwind, and we're all like, you know, the theater industry is like, you know, furloughing everybody left and right. Like people are out of work. Like it was just, it felt like the wild, wild west, right? And even until we got into that room, I would say, I was like, there's a chance that this isn't going to happen. And the reason is, you know, we originally wanted to film it in January. And, you know, DC was not, first of all, January was a shit show in DC. I don't know if you remember. There was some shit that happened on January 6th. The inauguration, all of that stuff, you know, was a total dumpster fire. And then we weren't open yet. You know, we weren't allowed to actually have more than 10 people in our space. And we were trying to get this waiver. And then we were denied the waiver. And so we actually did end up doing the filming with only 10 people in the theater at one time doing the filming. And man, I would never wish that on my worst enemy.
Yeah. And so now that you have it, or it's soon to be completed, I believe Heather was saying when I spoke with her, how has digital work fit into, for all three of you, for your seasons and your audiences, and how do you imagine this one sort of fitting into that work you've done, not in spaces, now that at the moment you're not allowed to be in a space?
Well, I'll jump in real quick and just say, you know, the STARS kind of approach to digital work this past year has been to make things that want to be watched on the screen for one reason or another. I don't want to take the live experience that I cherish and try to reproduce it on the screen. Let's pivot and make things with the screen if that's where people are going to be watching it. Animal Wisdom kind of falls in a different category in the sense that, as Pam and Maria were saying, Heather said, if we're going to make a movie, let's make a movie. Let's not just film a live performance. Let's make a version of this show that is intentionally made to be watched on the screen. So that really fits in with our philosophy. And, you know, it's that there's kind of, you know, there's something great about the fact that when you experience something live in a intimate setting, it's intimate, and there's only a certain number of people who can experience it. And that's both like a wonderful thing and also means that not that many people can experience it. So on the flip side, what's really exciting about creating this document, this version of the show, is that so many people can have the opportunity to experience it. And that, is the part of like this particular venture that I'm really excited about, you know, releasing it out there. Yeah.
And then, so, well, Pam, tell us a little bit about how digital and screen work has sort of existed for your audiences during all this stuff and how Animal Wisdom fits into that.
I mean, at the beginning of COVID, we pivoted really early. So I feel our spring has been this like, let's pull some levers, you know, let's do a reading series. Let's do something on Zoom that's truly live and interactive. Let's make a movie. And they're all so different. They're all coming out of necessity. And I'm excited to see what sticks. I mean, I think that's also what I think a lot of us are thinking about, like, what is the digital when we come back? And if on occasion a theater consortium like this makes a movie, let's do it. Like we can. If on occasion, you know, a Zoom reading series is what, you know, both can excite artists as well as give our audiences a little bit of extra, let's do it.
Like, I'm going to hold you to that, Pam.
We'll see what sticks.
I know.
Let's make a movie, Maria.
Because I do think that this is, it just seems crazy to me that we would have all of these, this learning and these experiments, and then just like put it away in a drawer and not build upon them. You know, how many years since I started in the theater, everybody's been talking about technology and trying to get more in connected into technology. And then we were forced to do it. And now we're going to basically say, oh yeah, but we're just going to only focus on being live and in person. None of this stuff is meant to replace. It's all additive. And so how can we actually continue to learn, experiment, think about pushing the field in these various ways?
Yeah. And wow. I also think continue to cooperate. I mean, I've had more conversations with, you know, fellow artistic directors, artists from all over the country than I know I would have, you know, had this not happened, had we not been.
Oh, tell me about it. Every single project that Willie undertook this year had at least one partner on it. And that I, you know, was very different and also was really exciting for sure.
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see how this all evolves going forward. And we definitely can't wait to see Animal Wisdom, which will be out soon. We're looking forward to it. Thank you, all three of you, for joining me. It was great to talk to you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That was Noel Elaine, Maria Goyanis, and Pam McKinnon from the three theater companies behind the film Animal Wisdom, available to stream May 15th through June 13th. Tickets at animalwisdomfilm.com. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. You can find past episodes or subscribe on all the pod places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.